It seems like no matter what kind of location you have in business, no matter what kind of equipment you have, no matter how much money you spend in marketing your company, none of those components have the ability of helping you become successful. You know that. People, and only people, can help you reach your goals. People have this incredible power. They can either take businesses and put them out of business, or they could take businesses and put them right up over the top. People have the ability to take what we call good businesses and turn them into great businesses. So one of the things that we all need to do is we need to be very clear on this point. None of us are in the auto repair business. We're all in the people business. So what we're going to do now is we're going to move on from systems, which is covered in step number 1 through number 10, and we're going to take a look at the people side of your business. So if you would be so kind as to open up your workbook again, please, and turn to page 9, step number 11. Let's take a look at some of the cardinal rules in managing people. It says rule number 1, we all need a coach. That's a rule you can't violate. You violate that rule, you will fail in business. The Michael Jordans, the Muhammad Ali's, all of the great athletes have coaches. You know that. Because what a coach does is bring out the best in people. That's what you need to do in your business. You need to assure that you or somebody in your business assumes the responsibility of being a coach. So rule number 1, we all need a coach. Rule number 2, all great players have great coaches. Now please understand, it doesn't say all great players have good coaches. Those two just won't mix. The great players have the great coaches. You need to read material that's going to help you learn how to sharpen your people skills. There's a number of great books that are out there. So that's rule number 2. Rule number 3, it says all great coaches know how to bring out the best in people. I'd like to give you a thought, and this is something that I learned a long time ago watching television. I remember at the time Muhammad Ali was on his journey to becoming known as the greatest fighter of all times. And every time I would see that man in a ring, I was always amazed that he had this frail little man that used to sit in a corner. His name was Angelo Dundee. And I used to ask myself, I said, why is it that somebody with all of his gifts, somebody with all of the talent, all of the skills that Muhammad Ali has, why is it that he need that little man sitting in a corner with him between every round? And it took me a long time to sort of put together those pieces and come to a conclusion, but I finally did. What great coaches do is they become emotional when people become logical. And what great coaches do is they become logical when people become emotional. Now let me give you an example as to what I'm talking about. Muhammad Ali's in the middle of a fight. It's round number 4, and he's getting emotional. He's doing all of the wrong things, as we can say. And he's starting to lose the fight because he's getting emotional, letting his head get a little bit too big, dancing around, doing all of the wrong things. So what Dundee would do is sit down in a corner with him between rounds and clearly tell him that he's losing the fight. He would say, you're down 3 rounds. You've lost the first 3 rounds. If you don't get your left up and if you don't cross with your right, you're going to lose this fight. Now, what I call that is nothing more than bringing logic to an emotional person. Now, sometimes everything is just completely turned around. Sometimes Ali would be in the ring and he would be logically fighting but still losing. Sometimes he'd be in a ring doing all of the right things being a textbook fighter, as we could say, and he'd still be losing. And then that's when Dundee became very emotional with him. That's when Dundee would look at Ali and say, "But you're the champ, champ. Listen to me. Ignore the scorecards. You're going to do it. If anybody's going to win this fight, it's going to be you. There's nobody greater than you." And he would use that emotional power to change the way Ali was thinking. And more often than not, he'd win the fight. You know that as well as I do. So what great coaches know is there's a time that you want to be emotional with people. They also know there's a time that you need to be logical with people. Keith, can we do a role play, you
yes.
and I?
Uh-huh.
Let's say, for an example, Keith is the service writer that works at Elite Auto Repair. And let's say that Keith is not reaching his sales goals. And he's pretty darn emotional about it. And what I need to do now is get logical with him. So I sit down with him, and this is the way the dialogue goes. Keith, what's going on?
Well, boss, you know, man, last week, as you know, the car count was way down, sales are down. This week, the same thing's happening. I'm reading the paper that economy's going through some tough times right now, and, you know, we're just not going to do it. You know, we're just not going to be able to hit the goal this month. I mean, the cars just aren't here, and, you know, I tried to sell a job just a few minutes ago, and I got told no, you know, no money there. And I just seem to be getting that same kind of objection from everybody, you know. Not sure of the economy, money's down. Just not going to hit the goal this month, boss.
Now, what I need to do at this point is I need to use logic. Because this guy's pretty darn emotional, isn't he? Keith, look, let me show you something. Take a look at the numbers here.
Uh-huh.
This is a report here of your productivity for the past, as a matter of fact, the past three quarters.
Hmm.
Now, look what you averaged here in the first quarter.
Uh-huh.
Great number, huh?
Yeah, that was a good quarter.
You bet. Look at this quarter. Another great number.
Yeah, that was a good number. Good
and
one
look
too.
At now look. Look at this 1 week period right here.
Yeah.
Look how low the number is here.
Yeah, that's true.
But look what the average was by the end of the quarter.
Huh.
Now look at the second quarter. Look, you had two bad weeks here. Neither of these 2 weeks did you reach the goal. Look.
Hmm. I remember those weeks.
Hey, you know there's one thing I know about business.
Uh-huh.
The numbers don't lie.
True.
Numbers don't lie, Keith. Look, quarter after quarter after quarter after quarter you produce.
Hmm.
You're going to have great weeks just like this one. Look at this week here. And you're going to have some weeks that aren't so good just like this one here.
Yeah.
So it looks like we're in one of those not so good weeks. But I know this. When we were looking to find a star to bring into Elite Auto Repair, we looked awfully hard. And when I first identified you, I said, now there's a man that needs to be a part of our company. So one of the things that I'm not going to be concerned about is a bad week. The numbers don't lie, Keith. Number one, number two, you're a star. Hey, thanks for being a part of our company.
Yeah, you're right. We'll pull it out. We'll do it.
I know you will. Now, all that we're doing here is getting very logical. All that we're doing is taking an employee that is emotional, getting beat up, as we say, emotionally, and we're just injecting some logic into the dialogue as a coach. Now, there's other times when this same employee is going to get very logical. What do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to get emotional. So can you use the numbers on me now?
Yes.
Watch. Now watch. All that he's going to do is get very logical with me with the numbers. Yeah, Keith, what's up? You wanted to see me?
Yeah, I did, boss. I wanted to show you something. Look here. I did this report. You know, as you know, sales are down last couple of weeks. And I've been looking at some of the numbers. Look at this. Our average car count has been down just about two cars a day. And you know what our average repair order here is. So you can see if you take two cars a day out of the equation, sales just aren't going to happen. I mean, we just don't have the cars. You got to have the cars to get the sales, boss. You know, so car counts are going down. And because of that, we're just not going to be able to hit the goal.
So what are your thoughts?
We got to get the car counts up or we ain't going to make it. I mean, the facts are the facts. You know, the numbers don't lie. We're down two cars a day. Got to get two more cars in here, or we're not going to be able to hit the goal.
I agree with you. You know, but I also know something else. I know that when we went out looking for a service writer, did a lot of scouting. As a matter of fact, we had a lot of irons in the fire, as they say. We looked at a lot of different people, did a lot of homework. I don't know if you remember all the questions that we asked when we interviewed you, times we went out to dinner, spent some time together. But I remember this. I said to myself, if there's anybody out there that could take Elite Auto Repair to the top, it's you. One of the things that I saw in you at that point was I said to myself, if there's anybody that has the ability to make things happen, if there's anybody out there that can drive car counts, drive CSI for us, drive sales, and drive happy customers, it's you. Keith, I can tell you clearly that that was 4 years, 3 months ago when those thoughts went through my mind. You know what? My thoughts haven't changed at all. You're a gift to our company. So I know what these numbers are saying. I can see this report as clearly as you can, but I'm going to make you a promise. If anybody in this industry can get the car counts up, if anybody can convert those phone leads into customers, it's you. I have no doubt in my mind. Hey, you'll pull it off.
Yeah, you're right. I just got to focus a little more. I can get it. I can do it.
I know that you can. Something else I'd like to say.
What's that?
Thanks for being a part of our team.
Oh, thanks.
We appreciate you.
Oh, thanks.
You're more than welcome. All that I'm trying to show you here is the importance of coaching, the importance of getting emotional when people are logical, the importance of getting logical when people are emotional. When it comes to helping people, and Keith had mentioned this earlier so well, you have to be very careful as to what you do to help people. You know, the late President Nixon at one time had said, he was talking about the welfare system, and he said the inherent problem with it is if you give a man a crutch long enough, you create a cripple. And there's truth to that. There really is. So you need to be careful as to how you help your employees. What you need to do is draw. You need to draft out of them what their suggestions are. So in a case like this, and I'm just doing a little fast forward here into the course, in a case like this, of course I'm going to ask him for suggestion, aren't I? What do you believe that we can do to increase our car counts? What about the leads that we're already having? What do you believe that we could do to increase our efficiencies there? Of course. And that's no different than coaching the technician. You need to be very careful that you don't give a suggestion to the employee if there's any reason in your mind that they can come to the same conclusion. So what you need to do is help coach them and lead them to that conclusion. So if you know that one of the things that they could do to increase car counts is become more proficient on the phone, the last thing in the world that you want to do is tell them that. The first thing in the world that you want to do is help them become aware of that. If you tell them that, it's your idea, not theirs. You all know what I'm talking about. That's not coaching. If they come up with the idea, they're going to have what we call ownership. So what you need to do is coach that out of them. You need to bring that out of them. And that's something that just isn't going to happen overnight. That's something that you have to consciously work at. It's sort of like, where do you go from here? How do you start doing that? And as we go through the balance of this course, we'll give you some pointers on the components that you could do to start developing your coaching skills. Okay, I'd like to share another thought with you before we move ahead. The Gallup Association had completed a study not too long ago. And some things came out of that study that were really more than just surprising to me. They're actually alarming to me. One of the things that they had done is spent 25 years, 25 years interviewing hundreds of thousands of people, thousands of different companies over a 25-year span with one objective, just one. They wanted to find what was the core components of not good managers, but great managers. They wanted to come to a conclusion as to what really is the definition of somebody that is truly a great manager of people. And when I saw the results of that study, I was in awe. Because what they had done, the way they had came to the conclusions, is they looked for the companies that had the highest levels of productivity. There's that P word again, huh? The highest levels of productivity, the highest levels of profits, the highest levels of customer satisfaction, the lowest levels of employee turnover, all of the key components that you look for in your business. They looked for those companies. Once they started finding those companies, then they went to those divisions. Once they started finding the divisions in those companies that fit into that component, then what they did is they started asking them questions. Everyone within the division, they started asking them questions about management, how they're managed, what they like, what they dislike. And any question that they ask an employee where it came up with any form of a no, it doesn't apply, they completely discounted that question. And what they ultimately wound up with was a list of questions every single employee in every one of these great divisions in these great companies, when they were asked the question, do you know what's expected of you at work? Every single one of them said yes. Every single one of them said yes. Remember how we talked about minimal levels of acceptable performance the other day? Do you remember that? Remember how we talked about this position in this company has to give us this kind of productivity and has to give us this kind of sales, this kind of build hours? Do you remember that dialogue? Every employee said yes to that question. They know what minimum levels of acceptable performances are. Look at question number two. Do I have the materials and the equipment I need to do my work right? Every one of them said yes. Now imagine that. Now, we know what that means when we're dealing with technicians, don't we? What about service advisors? If we went out and asked every single great technician, do you have the equipment and the materials that you need to do your work right? In the most profitable, most successful businesses, they're all going to say yes. They have the diagnostic equipment. They have the tools. They have all of the things that they need to become successful and help the company. Now, what do you think about service writers? What are some of the tools that service writers need? When a service writer says tools and equipment that he or she needs to be successful, to reach those goals, what would that be?
Reports, they need to know what their car counts are, their average autos.
Do you all agree? Yeah. You bet, Steve. So they need information at their disposal. What else do they need? If I'm gonna hire Dan as a service writer to lead auto repair, and I set these clear goals, clear expectations for him, what kind of tools can I give him or will he need to become successful?
Training.
So am I giving him the training that he needs? Am I giving him the support that he needs? Do we have the technicians in the shop that are going to be able to support him so he can reach those goals? Mind you, not some of the employees, every single one of them said yes to this question. Now, if you're scratching your head and going, well, Cooper, how many people are you talking about when you say everybody said yes? Approximately 800,000 people were involved in this study. Isn't that an amazing number? They all said yes. Any question, whereas every single one of them didn't say yes, was discounted from the list. So the questions that you're looking at here are the core questions of every great manager. Every great manager knows this, that the employees need to be able to say, at work, do I have the opportunity to do what I do best? At work, do I have the opportunity to do what I do best? Now, you need to pay close attention to that. Keith, as an example, he's not a good example, he's a great example. He's a gifted man, he has a lot of talents. One of the talents that he certainly has is sales. So what do we do with him? We put him in a capacity, in a position where he can sell. We don't want to put him in administrative capacity. You know why? Because we're not putting him in a position where he could do what he does best every single day. So whatever the talents are, whatever the good Lord put into them, remember we talked about that yesterday, is what you need to bring out of people. They need to be able to exercise that and use those talents every single day. If they don't, it's not going to work. Meaning that if he goes 2 or 3 or 4 days without an ability to communicate with somebody in some kind of a selling mode, then he's not going to be motivated. Do you understand what we're talking about? And when he's not happy, he's not going to produce. Number four, in the last 7 days, have I received recognition or praise for good work? Now we're starting to do what I call the breakdown of business. Now we're starting to get to the struggling points. Now we're looking at some of the components that are the missing links in business. Because most people, if I went out there, certainly in small business, certainly in any business environment, certainly in the auto repair industry, and walked up to technicians and service writers and said, let me ask you this. In the past 7 days, has someone in a management capacity, the person that you report to, in the past 7 days, have they looked at you at least once and said, you know, you're really doing a great job? Because if the answer to that question is no, in these companies, 25,000 divisions, that would have never made it onto the list.
Giving a paycheck isn't an adequate form of recognition.
Y'all hear Steve? Giving them a paycheck isn't an adequate form of recognition. Well, look, it's recognition or praise for good work. Step number five, does my supervisor or someone at work seem to care about me as a person? This is the critical component. Do they care about me as a person? Too many people are afraid to get, and I'm going to choose my words carefully because I don't want any misunderstanding with any of us here. A word that I believe best fits is intimacy. Too many people are afraid to get intimate with their employees. They're afraid to become friends with them. Cooper, I can't become friends with my employees. Why not? Well, they'll take advantage of me. It's no different than children. Children can't take advantage of their parents. Parents could give them the power to take advantage of them. So if you're clear with what your employees are and what they can do and the disciplines, like you are with your family members, you bet you can be their friends. And I would urge you to be their friends. I would urge you to understand that they have lives outside of the work environment. And they have personal issues that they're concerned about. And they need to speak to somebody about those things. And sometimes, you're the right person in the right place. So this rule number five says, does my supervisor or someone at work seem to care about me as a person? Are you just interested in my productivity? Or do you care about me? Do you see the differences in the two? Now, when employees recognize that you care about them, not just productivity, when you really do care about them, it changes their attitude, doesn't it? Their morale starts to improve. And the expression that I like to use is happy people produce. It's real simple. Happy people produce. When people feel good about what they're doing, they'll produce with you. If people aren't feeling good about what they're doing, if they don't feel good about your relationships with them, then you're not going to get the productivity that you're looking for. Look at number six. Is there someone at work who encourages my development? Is there someone at work? Everyone in this study all responded yes. Rob, you have a lot of talents. You know, you did a great job last week, and I know you could do a better job next week. You're a very gifted person. So we're not talking about just coaching. I hope you understand. We're talking about developing these people and really bringing out the best in them. So you need to do the soul searching. You need to look at the guy and the gal in the mirror. You really do. And you need to ask yourself some very important questions. The very first question that you need to ask yourself is, do your people know what's expected of them? Because if the answer is no, there's going to be a breakdown. Number two, you need to ask yourself, are you empowering them? Do you give them the materials that they need to accomplish the goals? Simply put, right? Can't get any more succinct than that. Number three, at work, are you giving them the opportunity to do what they do best every single day? One of the challenges that we have, and Keith and I see it on a very regular basis, can you take a technician and have them become a service writer? Well, yes, you can. Can we put men on the moon? Yeah, we've done that too. They're both big leaps. You know that. Most of the time, the reason technicians are technicians is they like dealing with their hands. They feel comfortable doing that. They enjoy that kind of result. Most of the time people are in sales is they think differently than technicians. I'm not putting one above the other. I'm saying that they're different. So if you take a technician and say, well, this guy now is going to be my service writer, he's done a great job as a tech, let's bring him into a service writer capacity, I hope you understand that what you're really doing is more than likely putting this person into a position where he's going to feel uncomfortable. I didn't say do his best, by the way, and if you look at this screen up here, number three says at work, do I have the opportunity to do what I do best every single day? And if they don't sell, if that's not what their hallmark is, if they fix automobiles and do a great job and you have them selling, it's not going to be the best benefit for them, which means it's not going to be the best benefit for you. I hope you understand what I'm suggesting to you. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have technicians and have them become service writers, because you can. What I am suggesting to you is before you take that leap, give some real good thought as to whether or not that person has the talents, the natural talents, that could be brought out. A great example before we move on is the car dealerships. Car dealerships will take gifted salespeople, and you all have probably seen this in the past. They'll take really talented salespeople and they'll make them sales managers. And I immediately tell myself, why in the world would you do something like that? Why would you take someone that is a gifted salesperson and make them a manager of people? It breaks down when you think about it, doesn't it? But that's the thought process. Well, gee, if this guy's really a great salesperson, he'll be a great manager of salespeople. More often than not, it's the furthest from the truth. And the same is true here. So the reason that I'm bringing your attention to this is it's important that you understand that you need to find the strength that these people have and give them the opportunity to bring it out every single day. Number four, again, as a review, says, in the last 7 days, have I received recognition or praise for good work? Keith, you think that's important?
I think that's critically important, Bob. You know, it comes down to that appreciation and the recognition. And, you know, anybody that's done any kind of people training know that that's one of the most important things you can do with people is appreciate them. And you notice it doesn't say in the last month, it says in the last 7 days. So what the question is asking, obviously what's in the question is, are you continually and constantly praising your employees when they do good work?
Let me ask you this, Keith. Have you seen any environments whereas the compensation package was a great compensation package, where the people that were working in the company were really well paid, but they never received any recognition or praise for good work? Have you seen those environments?
I see it all the time.
And what is the end result of that?
The end result is the employees are happy at first, but then they become unhappy, and they look around, and believe it or not, they usually end up leaving. And what always happens without fail is I hear back from the owner and they said, you know what I found out? That guy's actually making less money where he went. He left me for less money. And the owners can't figure out why that is.
Keith is absolutely right. So you need to make sure that you recognize the good work. And of course, someone has to encourage their development. Look at number seven. At work, do my opinions seem to count? So if we were to go through every auto service center and ask every technician, every service writer, every administrative assistant, every person in the office, does your opinion count? Do you think we'd get a resounding yes from everybody? What do you think? No, we wouldn't get that, would we? But every one of these 800,000 people said, yes, my opinion counts. You must understand, this is the core. These are the only 12 questions that everybody answered yes to. 800,000 yeses. 800,000 people in the most productive companies on earth. Productive, profitable, happy customers, happy employees. These are the questions that they said yes to. So, number seven, do my opinions count? How do you get the opinions from your employees? How are you going to get that information? Ask them. Where are you going to ask them? In employee meetings, aren't you? When you're sitting down doing one-on-ones with them, what can we do to improve, right? So you need to get their involvement. Look at number eight. Does the mission or the purpose of my company make me feel like my work is important? Is that important, Keith?
That's critically important. After a few years of people working, you know, they start to scratch their heads and wonder, what am I doing? Why am I getting up every morning and going to work? You know, what's this all about? And the place where they go every day, where they're going to spend a lot of their life, they have to feel like it's doing something in big picture kind of way, important to society, important to them, important to people. gives them a sense of identity, gives them a sense of purpose and fulfillment in life.
General Motors, great comments. General Motors, years ago, I should say decades ago, had a problem with some transmissions. And the problems were is there was one nut on this one anchor that wasn't being torqued down properly on the assembly lines. And GM was really challenged with it. And no matter what they did, they just couldn't get the people on the line to do the job right. And they fought with this issue and fought with it, and they couldn't resolve it. And finally, someone in General Motors came up with a grand idea. What they did is they met with the people on the assembly line. And I'm just going to give you a little bit of an overview of how the dialogue unfolded, or at least from what I've read, how the dialogue unfolded. Some supervisor met with everyone. They said, let me tell you the concerns that we have. As you know, we have a problem with this one nut backing off. Let me tell you why we're concerned about it. When this nut backs off, this stud backs out. When the stud backs out, this strut falls. When the strut falls, this band inside of the transmission, see how it operates? Well, the band isn't able to compress this drum. Well, when the drum isn't compressed, let me tell you what happens. This planetary turns inside. And when the planetary turns inside, when it's not stopped, then what happens is this drive shaft won't move. And when a drive shaft won't move, the car won't back up. So let me tell you what that really means. That means that if we as a team aren't able to solve this problem, there's going to be moms out there. They're going to be trying to back out of their garages to take their children to school, and they're not going to be able to do it. And do you know their defects went to zero? Because what they did is they took it from a loose nut to the importance of the job, the mom getting the children to school. Well, that's what you need to do with your employees. They all need to know the importance of the job, the importance of the job. Everybody wants to be a part of something that has an important part to life. Do you all agree to that? Right? So you need to make sure that all of your guys and gals would answer yes to this. Look at this. Number 9. Are my coworkers committed to doing quality work? Tom the other day talked about bad apples, and he had a lot of great comments. All of you have had great comments about having the wrong guys or the wrong gals in your business. Every single one of them, 800,000 people, said, yes, my coworkers are committed to doing quality work. Now, what does that tell us? You have to have the right people, because if you have one guy or one gal that really isn't committed to doing a job right for the customer, that really doesn't care, that's going to influence everyone else that's in the workplace. So in this test, every single one of them said, yes, everybody's committed to doing a great job. Look at this, number 10. Do I have a best friend at work? I hope you notice it doesn't say a friend. Number 10 says, do I have a best friend at work? Now help me out, folks. What does this mean? Help me out. Keith, what does this mean?
It means exactly what it's saying. Is there somebody that you have that works with you that is someone that you can confide in, someone that you can share life's joys and life's hardships and troubles with, someone that knows all about you and knows you intimately well, somebody that you know all about and that you know intimately well. I think it comes from when we're raised as children, we have best friends that we meet at school, then we go from school to work, and work is going to become that natural environment where we look for friends like we did when we went to school.
Number 11, look at this. In the last 6 months, have I talked with someone about my progress? Doing a great job? Not doing a great job? How are you doing? Making progress? Headed in the right direction? Is this called an employee review? Yeah, you bet. Number 12, at work, have I had the opportunity to learn and grow? At work, have I had the opportunity to learn and grow? When I first saw these lists of questions, I was awed. I'm not exaggerating with that comment. I was awed. Look at the importance of these. You know, and I was raised in an industry where I heard everything that argued every one of these, it seemed like. Well, your opinion really doesn't matter. You know, he's a new hire. Praise him, you gotta be out of your mind. Nobody ever praised me. You know, he should know if he's doing a good job or not. Hey, I'm not gonna be his pal. Every time I'm friends with employees, they take advantage of me. So all of these questions start to break down. And I'm sure that's why the good people at Gallup were obsessed with finding out these core questions. Because they said, you read 1,000 different books and you'll get 1,000 different components as to what makes a great manager. Oh, well, he or she's really good with people, or they know how to communicate with people, or they this or they that. And Gallup said, wait a minute, there has to be something of substance to this. You know, there has to be some way of quantifying what really good management is all about. Here it is. You now have the list. It's yours. So don't let it just fall between the pages. Put this stuff to work in your business. If I look at this list, every time I look at this list, I say, there's not one I'd strike off of there, boy. Those are all powerful questions. Those are soul-searching questions. Hey, we're on to the next page, on to page 10. Step 11 says, rule number 4, the best employees can't leave their personal problems on a doorstep. I hope you accept that rule. I hope that you understand that there's an inherent flaw in looking at an employee and saying, hey, look, if you have personal problems when you come to work, leave them on the doorstep. Because the people that I hope that you bring into your company are going to be what we call whole people. They're going to be well-rounded, well-balanced people. They won't have the ability to leave personal problems on the doorstep. I can't imagine a guy or a gal having an argument with their spouse, coming to work, and being able to completely put that out of their mind. I'm sorry. I can't imagine somebody doing that. If they do have the ability to do that, and if I was aware of that, I would not want them working with me. Because I would say, what kind of a spouse is that? How careless can you be about your loved one that you could come to work and completely forget about him or her or the problems that you're having? I hope you understand what I'm saying. What that means to me is that when I work with people, I'm not saying take the job home, don't read into that. What I am saying is this. If Keith or somebody that works with us is at home at night and they're watching TV and they're thinking about something about our business, I think that that's wholesome. I really do. I don't see a problem in that. I don't believe in this black and white world. You come to work in the morning, you put the key in and you forget your personal life, and you go home at night and you take the key out and you forget the work life. I don't believe in that. It's like lawyers or doctors. I'll be the first to tell you, when I look for doctors, I don't want good ones, I want great ones. I really do. The great doctor is the person that at 8 o'clock at night is going to be thinking about your medical problem. Isn't that the doctor that you really want? Tell me, that's a yes or a no. That's the guy or gal that you want, isn't it? Or the lawyer. You know, if you have a legal problem, I hope that you hope that your lawyer is thinking about that problem in the evening. Not necessarily billing you for it, but at least thinking about it. But they are, yeah, in the legal world, I guess that is true. Now, people will say, well, Bob, what if that spills over into the, you know, what if they have personal problems and that affects the business? Well, look, you live in a real world, don't you? There's things that happen in your personal life that affects the employee, doesn't it? So live in a real world. Allow room for what we'll call error. So that means if a guy has a problem and if he brings that to work and he's having a tough time and it shows through, then cheer him up and be his best friend, please. Well, Bob, man, what if it goes on for a long time? Well, that's what Corey's thinking. What if it just goes and goes? Well, then it's no different than children. That's when you sit down with them and let them know that now it is affecting the productivity or the morale of the business. If it gets to the point where it's affecting the morale or the productivity of the business, then it's time for them to change, or for you to change them. Well, that's called real world. The point that I'm trying to make is that if you want to lose employees, there's a real easy way to do it. Watch. I'll show you how to lose an employee. Keith, can we do a role play?
Yes.
You're an employee and bring some personal problems to work this morning. All right? So here we are. We're at Elite Auto Repair. Not that any of you have ever seen this happen. So Keith comes into work this morning, and he's got some personal things going on. Yeah, good morning, Keith.
Good morning, boss.
Yo, hey, what's going on?
Oh, nothing.
Hey, what are you talking about? Hey, what's wrong?
Oh, man, the wife and I got in a big old fight last night.
Excuse me?
We got in a big old argument. She just didn't agree with this one thing that I thought we should do, and, you know, we did it, and now it's not working out, and so she's on me for it, and we just got in a big old fight
look,
because
I got to get to work. Hey, look, this is really important. You got to leave that stuff at the doorstep.
That's hard, Bob. It was a serious fight.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, hey, Keith, you think I don't have problems? Hey, we all have problems, Keith. I mean, you know, my heart goes out to you, but we're here to work, Keith. If we don't take care of these customers, if we don't do what needs to be done, then we're all out of a job, all right? So come on, smile, cheer up, man. Come on, we got to handle these cars. Let's get these customers dealt with. What have I just done?
Alienated
him. What did I tell him was important to me?
Not him.
What is important to me?
Business.
Business. Not him. Business. Not him. That's a sure way to go out of business. That's a sure way to go out of business. What you need to understand is the balance between the two. You need to understand that the importance of business is important, right? Always needs to be. You can't sacrifice that. But you need to understand the importance of people too, don't you?
I talk to a lot of shop owners that get frustrated, and they talk to me for a long time about, you know, this employee with personal problems. And like Bob says, you know, the first step is to sympathize, work out what you can work out with them. And like Bob also says, if it goes on for a long period of time where it's just really destructing productivity and the morale of the shop, then you have to deal with it. You know, and that's not easy. I mean, life, you go through challenges. All of us have gone through challenges, and we still have to get in there and work. And, you know, we just have to understand those emotional times. Employees are going to have good days, not so good days. And we need to understand that and work in that. In the bigger picture, you'll have happier employees, and happier employees produce.
Step number 11, rule number 5, it says, you must catch the people doing things right.
Mm-hmm.
The behavior you get is?
The behavior you reward.
Do y'all agree to that? And you know what's really odd about dealing with people is the best rewards in life can't be bought at any price. They really can't. They really can't. The best rewards in life can't be bought. People won't sell their lives for $1 million, but they'll give it away for a Purple Heart, won't they? So you have to understand how people think. The problem that we have in business is we don't catch people doing things right. What we have a heck of a good talent at doing is catching them doing what, Keith?
Catching doing things wrong.
Catching people doing things wrong, right? That's what we normally do. We wait until a guy or a gal drops the ball, and then we're all over them, aren't we? Keith, you have a minute, I need to talk to you. And then we call them in the office. What you need to do is catch people doing things right. So most shop owners say, man, nobody ever did that for me. You're absolutely right. Most people don't do it for most people, period. Most people don't have management skills either. You know who taught me that? Great technician back in Ohio. The guy produced like nobody's business. And I could tell there was something in his morale that was just starting to wane. It was just starting to change. And I remember called him in the office and I said, Rick, what's bothering you? And he said, nothing. And I said, oh, come on, something's bothering you. And he said, no, nothing. And I'll never forget this. I literally, I'm not exaggerating, locked my office door. I walked over and locked the door. I said, Rick, you're not going to leave until you tell me what's bothering you. And he sat there. He was sitting in one of the chairs by my desk. He sat there in a chair. I stood in front of him. And he looked at his feet, and it must have been for 15 or 20 seconds. It seemed like it was for an hour. But he sat there and stared at his feet. Finally, he looked up at me. He looked right in my eyes. And I'm going to quote him. Imagine quoting somebody, you know, decades later. I'm going to quote the guy, because what he did was he gave me a life lesson. He taught me something very valuable about dealing with people. He said, Cooper, I'm going to tell you what's bothering me. You do everything that you say you're going to do. You pay us well and do all of those kind of things. But you never, ever, ever say thank you. Now, the moment that he said that, I'm going to tell you what I thought. I'm not going to tell you what I said. I'm going to tell you what I thought. I thought, you inconsiderate, ungrateful, low form of life, you. I can't believe what I just heard you say. I never say thank you? Me? You don't know who you're talking to, pal. Let me tell you who you're talking to. This is not what I said, this is what I thought. Let me tell you who you're talking to, pal. You're talking to the guy that gave you an opportunity to get into the business when you knew nothing about automobiles. As a matter of fact, I'm the guy that bought you your first set of hand tools. I'm the guy that gave you the training that you never had, pal. That's me. You know who I am? I'm the guy when they were literally towing your car, repossessing your car because you couldn't make the payments on it. I was the guy that wrote out the check. Me. That's me. I'm the guy when you couldn't pay your rent on your home that I bailed you out of that. That's Bob Cooper. That's me. And you know what? You never said thank you to me for any of that. How dare you? Now, that's what I thought. But fortunately, on that particular day, the good Lord must not have been very busy at the time. Because he was looking down into that room on that day and he said, Cooper, keep your mouth shut. And I was just stunned with his comment, and he got up and he walked out. Went back to work. I went home that night and I thought to myself, you know what? He's right and I'm wrong. You know what? He's right, I'm wrong. And here's why. Because he has a different job responsibility than I have. It's my job. My hat says coach on it. It's my job to help this man not only be everything that he could be, but even more so. It's my job to be his coach. It's my job to take his talents and bring out the best in him. That's my job. You know what? And I'm going to choose my words so we don't have any misunderstanding. It's not his job to do that with me. It's not his job to help Cooper become a better person. It's my job to help him become a better person. So on that day, I left with what I call a life gift. On that day, I realized the importance of two things. One, saying thank you. And two, coaching them. And I said, wait a minute. What this guy is clearly telling me is money isn't his motivator. What he's clearly telling me that drives him, what he needs more than anything else, is for people to walk up to him and say, you know what, Rick? Thank you very much for doing a great job. That's what he needs. And then as I traveled through life, no matter where I went, I saw more and more people that needed that. So now bringing that back to this room now, to this moment, I know that you can all agree with me. Most of us were raised in environments where your coaches weren't coaches. You can't disagree with me on that. Most of you were raised in environments whereas the people that taught you how to deal with people didn't know how to deal with people. So when you were being brought up as technicians or owners or whatever capacity you were brought up into the business world in, you were more than likely brought up in an environment where people didn't make it a point to catch you doing things right. Only time you would hear from them is when you did something that was wrong. So what Keith and I are asking you to do is break the mold. Please dust it off and say, you know, we're going to start all over again. I'm going to consciously catch people doing things right. Can we do another role play, Keith?
Yes.
Keith is a service writer and I hear him on the telephone. And he's handling three calls at once. And that third call that comes in, he does a remarkable job. He does an outstanding job on that third call. And I happen to be in the area and I hear it. Now, instead of walking by, I catch him doing something right. Keith, do you have a moment?
Yeah, boss, what's up?
I wanted to let you know that I couldn't help but overhear your telephone dialogue. Looks like you had three people going at the same time, huh?
Yeah, that was a busy one, boy. Got swamped.
I was impressed. Did a remarkable job.
Oh, thanks.
I couldn't help but notice, Keith. I know that you had the two lines going, right? And then
right.
The third person
yeah.
called. And
yep.
Sounded like they were beating you up pretty hard for price. And
yeah, that's Mr. Chandler. You're always doing that.
Boy, you did a phenomenal job, I got to tell you. Hey, thanks for being a part of our team. I'm impressed.
Oh, thank you.
I'm really
yeah,
impressed.
Thank
You're
you.
More than welcome. Thanks, Keith. Now, help me here. What am I doing with him now? Praising him. And what is this going to do?
Reward the behavior that you want.
So what I'm doing is I'm rewarding what behavior? What did he do specifically?
Handled three phone calls.
Handled three phone calls and did a good job, right? Handled a tough call and two others at the same time. Now by rewarding that, what am I teaching him to do?
Handle three phone calls
and do it in a professional, dignified way. Now, one of the things that's a little bit of an inside tip here on managing people, or I should say on coaching people, what I'm doing really is getting him to raise his own level of self-expectation. You must understand that when it comes to coaching people. You must understand when I walk away from Keith, you have, and Keith, I'm not going to speak for you. Tell me if I'm saying the wrong thing. When I walk away from Keith after telling him about that, I think it's really safe to say that he's going to echo in his mind, yeah, Cooper's right. I did do a good job. What do you think? Do you agree with me or disagree?
Yeah,
all right. So as soon as Keith says that in his mind, Cooper's right. I did do a great job. I can handle three calls at once. Now what he's really done is raised his own bar, hasn't he? Now what he's really done is tell himself, I am good enough to handle three calls at one time and do a great job at doing it. Now, the next time the situation arrives and comes around again, I don't have to be there. You follow me? Because now it's not his living up to my expectations, it's his performing to whose expectations?
His own.
And that's what coaching is all about, isn't it? Right? So do me a favor, please. Start catching people doing things right. Catch your technicians doing things right. Don't praise them at the end of the day. And I used to be guilty of that. It'd be the end of the day, and I'd say, hey guys, great job today. Now look at all the flaws. I'm not being very specific. Do you agree to that? I'm praising you for activity, not productivity. Number two, by thanking you at the end of the day, I'm not thanking you for anything specific. A great example is a puppy dog. Some of you have probably heard us use this example in the past. If I have a puppy dog that I bring home and I want to paper train the little guy, so I put papers in a corner of the room over here and I'm watching a game, and he goes over on the papers and he smells around, but he decides that he's not going to do anything there, and he goes over into the other corner of the room on a carpet and he makes a surprise. And I'm looking up at the TV screen and I go, you know, well, this game that I'm watching is going to be over in about a half an hour. When it's over, I'm going to spank his butt. Now, is something wrong with that? All right. So a half an hour later, I go over to the puppy and I go, bad boy. And he looks at me and goes, what's wrong with you? What's got into you? Do you agree with me? Well, if you agree with that logic, then you also have to agree with this logic. What would be the difference if he went around and smelled on the papers and made a surprise on the papers? And if I looked at the game and said, you know, this game's going to be over in about a half an hour. When it's over, I'm going to go over and praise him. Then a half an hour later, I find a puppy wherever he's at and I go, good boy. And he looks up at me and goes, what's wrong with you, pal? Correct? Do you agree? So the time that you should praise people is when?
Catch
them doing something right. You do it with puppy dogs. You do it with children. You must do it with your employees. You must do it. And I'm not saying, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying at the end of the day, it's not good business ethic to thank the people that work with you. Of course it is. What I am saying is, from one coach to another coach, it's not how you coach people. One of the service writers that we had that worked for us in the transmission business for years really had some great sales skills. And I remember talking to my wife one night about him. And I told her, I said, you know, the following morning when I go in, I'm going to let him know exactly how we feel about him. And I went in the following day, walked into his office, asked him if he had a moment. And he said, yeah, what's up? And I'll just do a little bit of an overview of what I told him. Said, well, the reason that I wanted to talk with you is last night Karen and I had a lengthy discussion about business. Mm-hmm. Business is doing very well. You know, we've been growing year after year after year, and one of the reasons that we know that we've been so successful is because of you. And I told Karen last night, before I go any further today, I wanted to come in this morning and let you know just how much we both appreciate you. And I stuck out my hand and shook his hand. He didn't say anything. And I left. And that evening, he came in, knocked on the door to my office in the back, and said, "Do you have a minute, Cooper?" I said, "Yeah, what's up?" He said, "I'd like to talk with you." And I said, "Yeah, come on in." And he said, "You know, this morning when you came in my office and told me about your and Karen's thoughts?" I said, "Yeah, I remember that." He said, "Did you notice that I didn't say anything back to you?" I said, "Yeah, I noticed that." He said, "Were you curious that I didn't say anything?" I said, "Well, yeah, I was. I just didn't think it was the right time to make any further comment." He says, "Let me tell you why I didn't say anything. I was speechless. Bob, I've been in the auto repair business for 15 years. You're the first person that's ever walked up to me and actually taken the time to let me know how much they appreciated me." Now, here's a salesperson that's speechless. I mean, that sounds silly in itself, doesn't it? But the point that I'm trying to make is really twofold. One, the importance of praising people. Two, how you do it is very important. Can we do a couple more role plays, Keith?
Uh-huh.
This is the way you don't praise people. Hey, Keith.
Yes?
Yeah, hey, great job, man. Great job on the phone with that customer. You did a great job. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thanks.
That doesn't work. When you praise people, you need to either, you could certainly do it on the spot without going in your office, but if you do it on the spot, you need to slow down. You need to make eye contact with them, and listen to me, this is an important component. If you miss this one, then you miss the opportunity to learn how to praise people. Don't let them interrupt you. I found that when you're praising people, more often than not, they will attempt to interrupt you. Can you show him again how you
yes.
do that?
Uh-huh.
Watch. Now watch. I'm going to try to praise him and watch how he interrupts. Keith, you have a minute?
Yeah, boss. What's up?
Well, the reason I wanted to talk with you is I heard you on the phone and I wanted to say thank you very much for
not a problem, boss. Yeah, day-to-day the job, you know?
Yeah, well, look, you've really done a remarkable job. Why did he interrupt me like that?
It's just not how to take right.
People feel uncomfortable. They do. People feel uncomfortable when people start telling you that you're doing one heck of a great job. So what I found that works like a champ for me is I don't let them do that to me. When I'm praising somebody, I'm going to make sure that they understand how important it is. Because what he's trying to do is diffuse it. Do you understand what I'm saying? He's saying, "Oh, no, thanks. I don't need that. Let's get back to work." And I'm going, "Wait a minute. Stop. This is important stuff. Slow down." So when they start to interrupt you, obviously, if they want to interrupt you, let them interrupt you. But start over again then. Would you please do that? And let them know how important it is. Can we do it again?
Yes.
Keith, do you have a minute?
Yeah, boss, what's up?
Well, the reason that I wanted to speak with you is I heard you on the phone with that lady just a while ago, and you did a remarkable job.
Just doing my job, boss. Well, that's what you pay me for.
Keith, listen, this is important. It's important that you understand that you did not a good job, but you did a great job. And we really are pleased to have you be a part of our company.
This program is continued on the next audio file in this series.